From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week we're talking with Sam Gapmeyer. He's the new president and CEO of the Peoria Riverfront Museum. Sam, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Now, you've most recently led a museum in Colorado Springs, and you've been at other museums from, I think, Atlanta to Idaho. What was it about Peoria and the Riverfront Museum that drew you here?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the multidisciplinary approach that the museum here takes, the combination of science, history, and art in one institution represents some unique opportunities.
I was so pleased to read, Sam, that you are interested in making creative connections. Talk about how you're planning to make the creative connections here in the Peoria area.
Well, the principal way is by taking an approach that involves addressing a topic or an idea of interest or relevance to the community or region. And so, you know, for example, in Colorado Springs, we did a series of projects on the subject of resilience. And so in our museum program, we showed wonderful Depression-era photographs by Dorothea Lange at the same time that my theater department there produced John Steinbeck's play of Mice and Men. And so it was a way of talking about how people have addressed or dealt with economic downturns. And of course, that has broad relevance to not only that community, but our nation as a whole. And so by bringing all disciplines to bear on a single idea or subject, we can intertwine them together and allow people multiple sort of ports of entry for conversations about topics of relevance.
Now, you've been with the museum for, I think, a little over a month now, and obviously these things take time to plan and execute, so it's, we're not likely to see any immediate changes in terms of the programming of the museum, but when might these things start to happen?
Well, we're planned about 18 months out,
right.
So you're correct that is a long planning cycle, but on the other hand, there are opportunities for us to be more nimble than that. For example, this coming Monday the 6th, we're inviting people who were impacted by the tornadoes to come to the museum and tell their stories. We'll be gathering stories and photographs and small artifacts just as a point of just as a way to bring people together and allow them to share their experiences in a way that we hope contributes to the healing process that is ongoing. But we're going to take those stories, those photographs, and those artifacts. And on the one-year anniversary on November 17th, of this year, 2014, we're going to mount a small exhibition about the tornado. So you're right, there are long lead times, but there are also opportunities for us to be somewhat nimble in addressing community needs and interests.
Well, you just mentioned about relevance. That is completely relevant then to what's going on in our own community.
Yeah, we hope so. And of course, museums are about stories, aren't we? I mean, the word history incorporates the word story, and so that process of gathering and preserving stories is key and fundamental to what museums do and is an important role that we can play in our community at moments like this.
And it's no news to anyone that the Riverfront Museum has also had some financial and some organizational challenges in its current incarnation. Do you have any ideas or any plans for how to address those over the next couple of years?
Yes, I'm really just sort of emerging from that state where you absorb lots of things and lots of ideas spinning around in your head, and those are starting to congeal in my mind. We're going to address the challenges of financial sustainability by looking at both the income and the expense side. The expense side you can address, I think, most readily. You take care of most quickly, and once we get that, we're going to work on growing the income side.
And talk a little bit more about how you're getting to know the community. You're a key player in our Peoria area, so I'm sure you have to get to know lots of people.
Well, my board was very gracious in organizing a series of evening receptions for me in my first weeks and invited community leaders and supporters of the museum. That was a lot of fun and met really quite a few people. I've been out and about. In fact, this Friday, tomorrow night, I look forward to participating in Gallery Stroll again, and that's going to be a wonderful experience. And other than that, I'm just reaching out to people like Nathan, Suzette, others, and having conversations.
How do you envision the Peoria Riverfront Museum as one element of the arts and cultural community in Peoria over the next few years? How do you see your organization interacting with other organizations, you know, like the theaters and the symphony and other arts groups?
Well, I think the key word for me, the driving motivation for me, will be relevance to the community and to the people we serve. And one of the ways that we can accomplish that is by having a very open approach to collaborations with other organizations and arts groups. And that could be manifested in just a lot of ways. I don't really know what those are because I haven't had those conversations with those people. But I found that if you let the world know that you're open to ideas, to collaborations, to suggestions, to input, that lo and behold, they come to you. And many of them sort of come to fruition in really wonderful ways that neither party fully anticipated or could have predicted. And so that's what one of the things I hope to bring to the institution is an openness to other organizations and to partnering with other organizations.
Well, one of the current exhibits at the Riverfront Museum is Chihuly and Friends, which features glass work by Dale Chihuly and a couple of other artists. What is it about Chihuly that makes his work so distinctive?
His work is distinctive, but I think even more important than the distinctive and beautiful quality of his work is the role he played at a point of transition in America's perception and the world's perception of where that line between art and craft lies. And he's just a fascinating guy. He studied interior design in Washington early on and actually worked at some architectural firms as an interior designer. But as a fairly young man, he began experimenting in his basement with hot glass and with blowing glass. And he got so fascinated with that medium and that opportunity that he made a commitment early on to make that sort of his life's pursuit. Very early, he got a scholarship to study at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a fellow named Harvey Littleton, who was the father, really, of the American studio glass movement. In other words, Littleton was the person who helped move the process of creating glass vessels across that line from craft to fine art. And having studied with him, Chihuly's sort of trajectory was set. He went on to teach at RISD for about 10 years and established the glass program there at the Rhode Island School of Design, and was the first American to work at some of the very key and very influential glass studios in Venice. And so the work is beautiful. There's no question about that. But even more interesting to me is this role he played in moving glass sort of from a craft context to a fine art context.
I was fortunate enough to see the exhibit, and I thought if you could walk us through what it looks like at the Peoria Riverfront Museum, from the paintings around the space to what's inside the middle of the space.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the paintings because I think many people know Dale Chihuly was injured in a horrible car accident in 1976 that took the vision in one eye, and of course that denies him depth perception, a critical attribute if you're going to be working hot glass, and also impacted the mobility on one side of his body. And so Chihuly, what he does is those paintings that ring the outside of the gallery are paintings that he makes as a means of communicating visually to his studio workers what he wants to accomplish with each project. And if you could see him making these paintings, I mean, he's a little like Jackson Pollock in that he puts the paper on the floor and the medium, the paint is wet and it's flying and he's swinging brushes and he's making quick gestures. It's very quick and dance-like when he does that. And when he's done, that becomes a document that guides his studio workers in creating a piece or a series of pieces. He, again, because of his loss of one eye and because of his mobility impairment, you know, he doesn't really handle the glass. He directs his studio in handling the glass, which is interesting because that's the way it was done back in the Renaissance when a master would direct a shop of individuals to carry out the execution of a piece. So paintings on the outside, incredible glass on the inside, you know, large chandeliers, pedestal size Macchia, just a wonderful selection of Cihulli's work, as well as two other really fabulous glass artists.
One of those is Vittorio Constantini, and his work is inspired by the natural world, and in this case, some remarkably realistic and lifelike figures of insects. Can you talk a little bit about that part of the exhibit?
Yeah, Costantini approaches glass with a method called lamp work. It's different from what Del Cihulli does. Lamp work involves heating rods of glass and then shaping the molten glass on a small scale to create the shape that the artist is trying to render in glass. Costantini was a naturalist. He's also, of course, a glass artist. He began apprenticing in some of the major studios in Venice at age 11. He's probably one of the masters of lamp work in the world right now. He loves nature, and out of that love of nature, he did this large series of works that replicate insects and spiders. And so these are displayed in cases as if they were actually as if it were a naturalist kind of display of dead spiders and dead bugs. And it's pretty amazing stuff.
I enjoyed Constantini, but I was completely impressed by Lino, is it Tagliapietra?
Uh-huh.
And his glass work and the beautiful goblets. Talk about them.
It's amazing. I mean, those come out of a very long tradition of glass working in Venice and Italy. He began working glass at the tender age of 12, and he apprenticed for 2 years only carrying water in the studio he served. That's all he got to do for the first 2 years of his apprenticeship there before they would even let him near molten glass. And so at the age of 14, he begins his life as a glass artist, and by 21, he's awarded the title of maestro. He's a master of his craft at the age of 21. And of course, Venice and Italy, I mean, it's the center of the world for that type of glass. And so he comes out of that tradition at age 21 with these absolutely phenomenal skills. He works as an artisan for some times, and then he does something interesting. He breaks out of that artisan tradition and opens his own studio. And so he, in the way that I described with Cihulli, crosses that line from artisan, a craftsman, into an artist opening his studio and making works that are individual and artistic and wonderful and aesthetic and all of those things. Del Cihulli called him the world's greatest living glass blower. And I think, Suzette, you got a sense for that when you looked at those goblets.
Stunning.
Yeah. There's another great story about Tagliapietra, and that's that all of those artists in Venice, all of those glass artists in Italy, there's a culture of secrecy surrounding what they do, the techniques they use, the methods they use. And that's been a centuries-old tradition. And he broke that tradition by going to a school that Del Cihulli formed just out of Seattle called Pilchuck Glass School, and shared with the students at Pilchuck Glass School and with Del Cihulli and others some of those techniques. And so he was criticized to some extent for violating those traditions, but in another way, he spoke very eloquently about wanting to ensure their continuance by sharing them with others who had a love for glass and molten glass.
We've been talking with Sam Gapmeier, president and CEO of the Peoria Riverfront Museum. Their exhibit, Cihulli and Friends, continues through April 13th. Sam, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Nathan. Suzette.
And Nathan, it's the first of the month, and that means it's the Chow Artist Gallery and Studio Tours are tonight from 5 to 9 p.m. Dozens of local artists are opening their studio doors so you can purchase original art, view artist demonstrations, take in some live music, and share a libation or two. That's tonight from 5 to 9 p.m., so plan to stop on by. Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.